Good morning. We're turning now to the conflict between Israel and Hamas in Gaza. The U.S., European Union, UN, and Russia have all urged an immediate ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. Israeli officials say the country has decided to reject an immediate 48-hour pause, and that decision came today after overnight meetings between Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and France's foreign minister. The fifth day of Israel's offensive against Hamas in Gaza continues. Mike Sargent is covering the story for our partner, the BBC World Service, and he comes to us from Jerusalem. Welcome, Mike.
Hi.
Now, this upped international pressure for a ceasefire, what do you make of it?
Well, it's certainly been building over recent days as the death toll within Gaza has mounted. Now about 390 Palestinians have been killed in 5 days of airstrikes. And on the Israeli side, four have been killed by Hamas rocket attacks. So the international community, as you say, have been calling for an immediate ceasefire. One specific proposal came from France for a 48-hour pause in the violence, but that was rejected by the Israeli government today. They say that they need a permanent ceasefire, permanent solution to this, not what they describe as a Band-Aid, a sticking plaster that's going to come unstuck in a few days.
And in response to that, Mike, there are reports today that the president of France, Sarkozy, may actually make a trip to Israel. Do you think that'd make any difference?
It might do. France is certainly pretty active in the diplomacy at this stage, wants to get involved, thinks it can play a role in bringing this to an end. As you say, the French foreign minister has been in talks. The Israeli foreign minister, Tzipi Livni, is due to go to France tomorrow. And it'd be no surprise if Sarkozy does come here at some point. So that diplomacy is continuing. Whether it can yield any results is open to question, because we've seen just today the furthest attacks yet by Hamas into Israeli territory, some 25 miles inside Israel. And as long as that is continuing, it's very hard to see how Israeli public opinion will accept an end to this that is anything short of the destruction of Hamas. But whether that can be achieved by airstrikes alone is very uncertain.
And Mike, what can you tell us about the conditions on the ground in Gaza today?
Difficult. Conditions in Gaza have been difficult for many years, and they've been getting more difficult. This is an extremely overcrowded area. It is almost entirely dependent on foreign aid. When there is a military action against militants in Gaza, everybody in Gaza suffers as a result. The aid has not been getting through until the last 24 hours, when the trucks have started to move in. But there are shortages of food, shortages of medicine. The electricity is intermittent. There's very little fuel. So, people there are suffering. And the Israeli government wants to draw a wedge between the people of Gaza and Hamas, saying its fight is not with the people of Gaza, but only with the militants of Hamas. But it's very hard for the ordinary people in Gaza to believe that and to accept it when they're suffering every day as a result.
Well, Mike, you sketch out a couple of potential objectives there, of either demands on the part of the citizens of Israel or this sort of wedge driving that you're talking about here. If we look to the north in Lebanon as a precedent here, typically ceasefires by Israel, agreements to ceasefires by Israel, have been timed by some sort of facts on the ground militarily. Do you see any sort of military objective in Gaza that might motivate Israel to stand pat and maybe agree to a ceasefire with some sort of gains in their pocket?
Well, I mean, whenever they stop this, they're going to have to be able to say to the Israeli public, it was worth it in some shape or form. It was worth the killing. It was worth the destruction. So they have to be able to show that whatever they've done militarily has stopped the rockets being fired out of Gaza towards Israel. Now, the 2006 war with Lebanon, in the end, the rockets were stopped by an international agreement, a lot of pressure and a lot of UN troops on the ground. But that operation, even though it brought an end to rocket fire, was perceived as a big military failure for Israel and came with a lot of Israeli casualties. So that's why military commanders in Israel are very wary about what's going on at the moment. They don't want to launch, for instance, into a big ground offensive in Gaza with no plan as to how to get out and no plan as to exactly what they're going to achieve, because they may be able to demolish buildings with airstrikes, take out rocket launchers, but whether they can destroy Hamas as a political movement by bombing Gaza is another question entirely.
And that issue about ground troops has been discussed in the last, particularly the last 24 hours. Are you seeing any signs that Israel is moving towards moving in on the ground in Gaza?
I think Israel wants it to be seen as an option that's very much on the table. Israeli officials are not denying that a ground operation could happen soon. We've seen tanks gathering on the border with Gaza. We've seen Israel calling up an extra 2,500 reservists into its army in the last day or so. So all the indications are that a ground operation could happen at some stage in the future. One thing that is stopping it at the moment, in addition to the military and diplomatic risk, is the weather, which has been absolutely appalling in Israel and Gaza. And the military commanders are very reluctant to go in more extensively while the conditions remain so difficult.
Mike Sargent, thank you. Mike Sargent is a BBC reporter, and he was coming to us from Jerusalem. And now we turn to Femi Oke, who's got the headlines of the hour.
Hello there. The time is 27 minutes past the hour.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.